It would have been okay if that song went on for another minute, minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes.
Not enough room on the vinyl.
High def vinyl's coming.
What?
Yeah, high def vinyl's coming. I read that story this week. Welcome back. It is the Melnick and Murphy podcast, episode 11, coming to you following the Southern Soul and Rock and Roll review at Club Soda last Friday night before a jam-packed audience of... We went above our initial capacity. We had to create a little more room. So in the end, there were about 850 people there, close to 900 people if you throw in the musicians. And a great time was had by all. We are at CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side, West Side.
Alan Hodgson, Tony Colgan, thank you, boys, very much.
Tony Baljons.
Helping us out. They held a you as the band leader. Somebody... In a more complimentary, much more complimentary manner than it might sound, somebody after the show referred to you as the Paul Schaefer of Montreal.
The Carl Alsner of musical directors. I'm not a Hall of Famer, but I'm solid.
Yeah.
So how
you doing? I mean, you were up there. How many hours were you actually? Which songs were you not on stage for?
As many as I could bow out of. It was just, I don't know.
How many it was songs? A great time. And thank you, all of you who came out to support Billy Bob Productions on an evening. Frankly, when we first started, we knew it would be a difficult concept to sell. But eventually we managed to get the word out with a lot of help from a lot of friends. And people really discovered what we were trying to do, and I'm still hearing from people who are thanking us and what a great time they had. You know, there's a certain vibe at our shows, at Billy Bob Production shows, whether it was upstairs at Turbo House in St. Henry in front of 80 people or something like what we did here at the Last Waltz. There is a definite Billy Bob Productions feel to what we do, and we did it again. So we couldn't have done it without the support of a whole lot of people, but especially those of you who took the time to... in some cases, hang out for 5.5 hours. Some of you were there. I know when the doors open, even before the doors open, there was a lineup at 5:30 with the doors opening at 6:30 because we didn't have a whole lot of tables available. So thank you very much on behalf of Shane Murphy, Lloyd Fischler, Gary Silverman, and myself, Billy Bob Productions. It was a great night. And Shane was incredible. In not only the versatility on stage, but also leading the band, leading a lot of the musicians through sound check, and before that, right here, right? Was it 2 days prior to the show?
Yeah, no, we did an 8-hour rehearsal on Monday, the Monday before, and ran a bunch of songs with whoever could come by, and the rest, if we didn't know the words, we ended up mumbling. Alec McElkrin, we call it yogurting, when you mumble gibberish, like a lot of songwriters when they're writing songs, they'll, you know, like Paul McCartney with Yesterday with scrambled eggs, you know, stuff like that. So Alec McElkrin led us through a few of them.
Now, Alec, I know you did it on stage, you introduced the whole band, but why don't you mention who the house band was? That was a tremendous house band that you led. And I know Alec, in particular, is there a song recorded in the 20th century that he doesn't know?
I know his Cole Porter game is weak. No, it's probably actually solid. So you came to me with the concept of having you said I want Alec McElkrin and Rob McDonald.
Right.
And I had nothing to say. I was like, okay. And then I said, I came back at you with the concept of having two drummers because of the whole Allman Brothers thing. And my bass player is also my drummer, and my drummer is my drummer. So meaning Tony Lombardi was my drummer for a long time, who also happens to be, I guess, undiscovered musical genius. He just picks up the bass and he's like, oh yeah, I've been playing a bit of bass, and long story short, an opportunity came up for him to sit in on bass, and we he said, why don't you give this guy Marky Beats a try? And Marky had been kicking around the West End scene for a while, and then I've been playing with him for a year. So I'm always playing with two drummers, except one of them is playing bass. So then I bounced that off you. You said yes, two drummers. So then we have Marky Beats, Tony Lombardi, Rob McDonald, Alec McKelkren, and that was the initial house band. And then we had Antoine Gretton on,
who
on
I had
keys.
Never heard of.
Yeah, so he's bigger on the French side of town, and I met him through Tony Albino, and he's a fantastic singer songwriter in his own right, and can arrange for strings and read and write and classically trained and can play any style of music. And he and I invited him to come and jam with me a bunch of times at Bistro Jojo. I was using him for, I opened with him for Buddy Guy at Metropolis about 4 years ago. And that was with Lombardi and Avi Ludmer, who was playing with Frank Marino at the time. And then I just had this gut feeling. I was like, I had this kid, I shouldn't say he's a kid, but kid to me, he's like 27, 28. Guy named Andrew Molgin. And I played with him at Bob Gainey's daughter's wedding. I met him.
In Peterborough.
Yeah, Peterborough at Colleen's wedding. And then Graham Chambers on percussion.
Well, I was so happy to see you. Like, I had no idea. First of all, I love Graham. He's been everybody, you know, who's seen live music in Montreal for decades knows who Graham is, but there are a lot of people, unfortunately, who don't.
Yeah.
And it was, I was particularly thrilled to see him up on stage all night.
Yeah, he was the man of wisdom and experience, and he's just turned 70 or 69. And he plays hockey 3 times a week. He refs hockey, physically fit, plays all the time. And I'd locked in the drummer spots. So he's primarily a drummer and a vocalist. And I said, I know that he plays percussion as well. And it was the strangest thing. You know, it was this, the way it all came together. I'm like, I want to get Antoine on B3, rather than Bayou. And I said, I'm going to bring in this kid from Toronto on saxophone, and I was just like, I saw Graham like maybe 10 days before the show, and he wasn't slotted to be in the house band, and then I saw him and I was like, do you want to come play Friday, the April the 6th show? And he said, I'd love to. I said, can you bring your percussion set up? And he did, and it was just one of those things where I knew all the musicians individually, and they had never played together, but I was never in any doubt as to, you know, what it was going to sound like, because I knew they were all fantastic in their own right. So,
and it was great to hear at the very end of the night, in the midnight hour, which we started this podcast with, is how we ended the concert, and Graham took the lead vocal.
Yeah,
that was cool. That was all you doing that.
Yeah, well, it was you. It was,
well, I said it was your call. In terms of the vocals, it's your call.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, we had tried to sort of semi-organize the encores, if there were encores, and there were encores, and it's kind of like mix and match. But at that point in the evening, after a 4.5-hour show, you know, people are imbibing in adult beverages, and
yeah, we'll get to that part.
There's some burning of the incense. There's some burning of the sage. Smelt like incense
burning
downstairs.
Burning of the midnight oil.
Yeah. But Graham has a long history in the city. He played with Boule Noir. I don't know. You know
sure.
What Boule Noir is?
Sure.
He played at the Esquire Show Bar. He saw Jimi Hendrix at the Côte de Neige Community Center in like 1967, played at Rockheads, you know, saw Bo Diddley at the Esquire, and it felt good, and it felt right having him up there. And we had Marky, who was the youngest member of the band, who just turned 30, and Graham. So it was like 40 years of, you know, age gap and a lot of experience and a lot of gigs combined on that stage. So, you know, and Alec, who's very sort of shy and self-effacing and not in any way a braggart, should be, because he's, you know, it starts with, it's, I had him in between Marky and Tony, and that was the first type of show for them. You know, they play in their respective original projects, Tony with John Jacob Magistri, and Marky's doing production stuff for Jonathan Roy, Johnny Roy, and doing LA.
Who's
and
really
stuff like
good,
that.
He's by really the way. Good, he's not just Patrick Waugh's kid. He's a good yeah, musician. Yeah. He's intense.
Yeah, he's intense, and but Marky's doing like really sort of cutting edge pop music, but he's also, you know, trained at the New School for jazz as a jazz drummer and has played at the Lincoln Center. And
really,
yeah,
that's pretty
yeah.
cool.
So, you know, and Rob McDonald is you know, I call him the Godfather, because when I was in my early 20s and we were hanging out at Deja Vu, it was Alec and Rob in a band called Crawdaddy, and it was jam night on Sundays, and then on Mondays it was Crawdaddy doing their own thing. But if you were like friends of the band, they would invite you up. And Rob was fantastic back then. We're talking, you know, 20, 25 years ago. And so he really sort of gave me a leg up and let me see what a really good guitar player looks like up close, and being on stage with a really good guitar player, and was always very kind. And my skill set obviously was different 20 years ago than it is now. So to have him on stage and beside me was a thrill. So really from top to bottom, I really was super pleased, and I was super proud of Marky and Tony, because they were...
It's the only question I had. Not because I doubted you or anything, but I hadn't seen them in this kind of environment before. Because I was actually thinking of perhaps other drummers who've been around a little.
Sure.
And I said, Shane, this is a big deal. Can these guys do it? And Shane didn't hesitate. Absolutely.
Yeah, I knew that it was going to be a pressure situation for them, but they really did their homework, and they're both very musical guys. They play the drums, but you know, Marky can play bass, he can play keys, he can play guitar, he can sing. Tony can play bass, you know, plays guitar with his girlfriend Roxanne in a duo. And they listen to a lot of music, and it's not just drumming for drumming's sake. And they've put in a lot of hours together. Now maybe not both on drums, but you get to know a guy. So
you wouldn't have known that the names you just mentioned as a band had, up until 5 days prior to the concert or 4 days prior to the concert, had never played together before.
Never.
That was amazing. It was amazing. I don't know how much feedback you're getting or have gotten, but I received a ton from people who just were blown away. I had high expectations for the show. It exceeded my own expectations.
Yeah, well, I mean, I put a lot of hours on stage with Alec in various units. I knew Rob very well, and starting with those guys. And then once Marky and Lombardi were locked in, it was, you know, I've played many, many gigs with those guys in the last it'll be a year with Marky in April. But, you know, at least three times a week, every week, not including rehearsals, not including, you know, bigger festival shows. And there was no doubt. But everybody has to have a chance sooner or later to be able to do something like that. And I told them both after. I was super happy and super proud. And, you know, made me look good, you know, because everyone was like, yeah, the drummers are tight. They're locked together. They're doing things in this.
They went outside their zone, right?
Well, it was synchronized. It was like synchronized swimming, you know. But they drink each other in. They're around each other all the time, so it becomes intuitive. And I don't think had they not played together so much, it would have been that tight. But they were locked in, you know. So
that was great.
I couldn't have been more happy with the house band.
This is episode 11 of the Melnick and Murphy podcast from CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side.
And it's brought to you by our main sponsor, who is at the Southern Soul and Rock and Roll Review in the house at Club Soda. Lauren Rubin of Paramount Financial Services.
Paramount!
If you want someone who will definitely take good care of your money, who is extremely trustworthy and is, in every sense of the word, a total mensch, Paramount Financial Services. They're at 100 Alexis Neon, Suite 219 in Ville Saint Laurent. You can give them a call at 514-905-0885, or you can get in touch with Lauren at lauren@paramountfinancial.ca. And he was thrilled, obviously, if you remember the conversation we had about the song Simple Man for his dad. And you can imagine how he felt when Bilal, by the way, really, I mean, there are so many highlights every time I think back to that night. And the reaction, a lot of people are not aware that Bilal's he's a musician.
Sure.
And they're not aware that he could sing. And now close to 900 people are aware that he could sing.
Yeah.
And that was a great moment early on.
Yeah, for sure. And a powerful song. And Skinner takes a beating for Sweet Home Alabama and Freebird, but they have a lot of great songs. Yeah, it was fun. It was a blast.
The poster and the postcards that you saw, they were a shade of black and I don't want to say orange. It's kind of a light orange that you may have seen. Southern Soul and Rock and Roll Review at Club Soda. And pictures of Aretha Franklin in the upper left, Duane Allman in the middle on guitar, and Otis Redding on the bottom right. Did you do this? Did you design it? Did you come up with the concept of it? And if not, who did?
The concept I came up with, but I left it in the hands of a friend of mine named Karim Tirouz of The Rising Few. And he's a fantastic visual artist, and he does all his own artwork for his bands and stuff like that, and he had done some work. I designed the cover of the Stay in the Saddle for Rosie EP. He did that for me, and we connected over music and ended up becoming dear friends, and he's helped me with my website and what have you, and so I sort of sent him a few examples of like the old Chitlin Circuit one-nighters, you know, with all the pastel colors, and gave him the names, and he came up with that.
Oh, I love it. Also, a lot of people have reacted to it, especially the posters. Several people bought posters on site.
Cool.
And so let's hear our next song, which features two of the three people I just mentioned, Aretha Franklin and Duane Allman on lead guitar. Duane Allman was a brilliant session player, which we'll talk about after this version of a classic that you all know, but you might not have heard this version of The Wait.
I pulled into Nazareth. I was feeling about a half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a girl might find a bed? And the preacher just grinned and shook my hand. And there was all he said. Thank you.
That's Aretha Franklin's version of the classic by Robbie Robertson and company, The Band, with Dwayne Allman on lead guitar. And he's all over a lot of sessions in the late 60s.
Why do you always say that? Robbie Robertson first.
It's his song. He wrote it.
You don't know that for a fact.
Yeah, well.
He wrote the whole thing?
Yeah.
Nobody chimed in?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, Levon Helm didn't like to write songs.
How do you know?
Well.
Because Robbie said so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, when the band split up for good after the last waltz, how many songs did Levon write? How many songs did Robbie Robertson write? Anyway, let's not go there for now. But Dwayne Allman.
It's too smooth. We need some contention in the podcast. Come on.
Well, I read Levon Helm's book, which was not written by him. It was written by a ghostwriter. It was written by somebody else. Levon was obviously very bitter about how things turned out. And Robbie Robertson had a chance finally to answer, and he's actually writing a sequel to the book. He's working on volume two of his story. His book ended with the last waltz, and now he's picking it up when they had all their issues. So I'm anxious to see what goes down, but he made it quite clear. But the facts are that Levon Helm did not write songs after the band split up, and Robbie did. He did. He had a hit record.
Let's move on. I don't want to dwell on this. Dwayne Allman.
Dwayne Allman is obviously a big part of this. We wanted to do another song to end, which we're going to end the podcast with, but... I don't know if you want to tell some stories about the night that that people want to hear about. Here before we get there, let's stay on the stage, because our guest two podcasts ago was Selena Wolfe, and as I told the story that night, I kind of heard her name in circles that you got to see Selena Wolfe sing, you got to see her sing, and when I was talking to Shane about this show, there were obviously several females. You saw most of them, Dawn Tyler Watson. And Angel Forrest and Andrea Romolo from Toronto did a great job with Dusty Springfield. You guys sounded so tight. You know, that's the thing. You had sound check with Andrea, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, she'll tell you what key she was going to do the song in, and that's all you knew. And you guys sounded like you had been playing together forever, and you did that behind almost everybody. It was so cool.
But that really, speaks to the. The expertise and the musicality of the guys on stage.
The professionalism.
They're just.
Yeah, but you're part of that.
Yeah, but I mean.
It'd give you a chance to also be kind of like a session guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've done sessions for other people. It's not my forte, but I've done studio work and helped people out with songs and done production in various roles. But I mean, it starts with the players. You know, it starts with musicians. If the musicians aren't there, then there's nothing that you can do. So, and you asked me before at the beginning of the podcast, how many was I on stage for? I'd say between 16 and 18 songs. Just a guess.
Yeah.
And you were like, go on for I'm going down. Come on. And I'm like,
no. I've had enough.
No.
I saw Rob McDonald also at the end. I said, aren't you supposed to be on stage? He said, I think I've done enough.
Yeah. No, it was, I'm going down was Rob, Paul DeLoria, and Corey. And Ricky Paquette.
Ricky Paquette, who's Angel Forrest.
Was Rob on for I'm Going Down?
He was, but he didn't get his guitar solo.
And I'm sure he didn't care at that point. I mean, the fatigue was starting to set in because we were there from like 11 in the morning. And soundcheck is always, I knew that we had to soundcheck Hotel Tango because they were nine
piece. Howard Billerman's group.
Howard Billerman's Hotel Tango recording studio All-Stars. Was a nine piece, and I knew that we had to make sure that the Ghost Town had a sound check because they were six piece and they were the biggest chunk of the night in terms of time and one of the main features of the night.
What a set!
Yeah, huh? They're great.
And I hope I didn't see you guys because I was actually busy watching the show, fortunately, as opposed to a couple that we've done. But I hope you got to know Matt Isbell a little bit. Did you get to spend a little bit of time with him? Because you guys are very similar
total,
in a lot of ways.
Total time, maybe hanging out with Matt and talking to him, total amount of time, maybe 10 minutes, maybe. You know, where do I park the trailer? We exchanged pleasantries outside in the back door. And really, for me, it was the backstage. Once the show got rolling, it was like I said to you before we started recording the podcast, it was like a house party right before the cops show up. Like, it was always just on the brink of, every dressing room was packed with people, and there was Selena's dad, Vic, bought a bottle from the bar, like a 40-ouncer of Jameson, like the big boys, you know?
Right.
And that's
going
around.
Well, he promised to do that. When we recorded...
Shout out to Vic for getting the artist.
When we recorded a podcast... He said, the first whiskey is on me.
He wasn't joking.
Yeah.
All the whiskey was on Vic. And then someone, I think our man, was our man Lloyd who delivered the bottle of Booker's?
That's my bottle.
That was your personal stash.
My personal bottle, yeah.
Oh, my God.
If you're going to go bourbon on a Southern Soul and Rock and Roll review, you're going to go with the best bourbon. And,
is that your favorite bourbon?
That's my favorite bourbon, yeah.
Remember, you gave me a very healthy shot of it, which
yes,
I needed
well,
at a very,
you
very...
You turned around at some point. Early. It was out just before your Sun Records tribute, I think, or during your Sun Records tribute, or just before Selena. So I want to get to Selena, because that's where I was going here. So there was another high-profile female singer who was originally supposed to be part of this, and I don't want to get into all of the details, but in the end, she bowed out, and it was... at the time, I was a little upset, but I'm hardly upset about it. So I said to Shane, I said, Shane, we're going to need another female, just somebody who can really bring it.
I told you.
And he said, Selena Wolf. And again, I had heard Selena, but I never personally seen her sing. But if Shane is vouching for somebody's talent, then I know they're good. And I finally went out to see her, and we told the story when she was with us. That's Victor's daughter, Selena. And man, oh man, I was standing side stage right behind Graham Chambers, and when Selena finished Respect, the first of the two songs that she did, he turned to me and opened his mouth. And again, Graham Chambers has seen a lot in his 50 years of performing.
Right around the block. Not his first rodeo.
I'm sure that was the first time he's seen or heard Selena Wolf. And then when she finished up with It's a Man's World, can you feel that on stage, what is happening, like how special that moment is?
Yes. Yeah, and it was entirely on her shoulders to deliver the performance.
How old is she?
22, maybe? Maybe 22? So you can't, you know somebody's talented, you know someone's a natural, you know someone's been working on their craft and entering into the world of music, but I can't do the songs for her. I can't. So yes, you're in front of a band of, you know, highly experienced musicians who are used to backing singers and what have you. Take me out of the equation, just those guys. If I wasn't even on stage, you know, the result would have been the same. But it was up to her to, you know, and I think it was a defining moment in the show. I think it was one of the highlights of the show.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
It's a man's world, if not the highlight of the show. So...
Incredible. Now, did Victor end up with the bottle backstage after?
No.
Oh, that was before she sang?
I forget. Well, it's all a blur.
He saw his daughter perform.
I'm sure he did. But it was, you know, I got to stop saying, you know. I was going, you know. I'm going to take lessons from the master. Yeah, so she was there with a band of highly experienced musicians behind her, but you can't help someone deliver a performance like that. They either have it in them or they don't. And when the time came, it's you either shine or you don't. And there was, you know, she skipped soundcheck, but we had rehearsed here at CNS, and
that's part of her regular.
Yeah,
gig,
but
right?
Yeah, but
not with you guys.
Well, but yeah, but playing it at, you know, Honey Martin's or, you know, and I love Honey's. It's my home base. I've played there more than any other place. But Club Soda, full of 800 or 900 people with a band that you don't know. Bud was there. Bud played great. Again, that's a completely different situation.
With Alex LaBelle.
Errors and pressure, and Alex LaBelle was on keys. But it's a different, it's all the same. You're still playing.
Yeah, it's game seven.
it's game seven and errors and your timing and your comfort level is stripped away. Unless you're used to doing venues that size, then you become habituated to it. But if not, you can crash and burn very easily. And she didn't.
Oh. So could you, so you know as it's happening, it's a special moment, and then when the song ends, you could tell how the room erupted, right?
Yeah, I mean, she has a natural charisma and a natural ability to connect with the audience. People get engaged with her, and they're sucked into her vibe and her aura, as they are with all great performers. And I think you either have that or you don't. And she does. And there was a point where she hit the really high note. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about during It's a Man's World, where the song starts to build up and there's a crescendo and the climax of the song, if you will. And it's not like the James Brown song. It is, but it borrows from it. But it's really her own version. So when she hit that note, you could feel like. It's like a shot of electricity goes through the room and through the band. And that's something that you can't rehearse or orchestrate. And that was Selena that delivered that moment for everybody.
Well,
in
thank
the room.
You to Selena. Thank whether you to Shane.
Whether it's the band or the audience. So that moment was executed and brought. She brought everybody to that place. So
you seem to be describing in that moment what it might have been like to see, and I don't mean to. It's just a nice segue to connect the two in terms of if you were around in 1965, 66, 67 to see Otis Redding live, which thankfully has been caught on tape. Was caught on tape by D.A. Pennebaker, who did the Dylan "Don't Look Back" and then "Eat the Document," and has done a lot of documentary films. But Monterey was the big one. And Otis, in addition to Jimi Hendrix burning his guitar and Janis Joplin, which they had to do a second shot because they didn't catch the first one, which was amazing, of Ball and Chain, that was Otis Redding's coming out party to America. And Otis Redding, there was actually a song that wasn't performed last Friday night at Club Soda, but I think he probably, there were probably more Otis Redding songs than any other artist, and there were more songs that people requested, we just didn't have time to get to. And I want you to lead into this particular performance from Monterey.
So this is in 1967. It's Jimmy's homecoming in it, and Otis was put on the bill, and it was primarily a psychedelic rock, modern rock festival. And there were some people who thought that Otis was sort of out of place because he's playing for all these hippies who were stoned out of their minds.
San Francisco, 67.
San Francisco, Monterey, Summer Love, and he's in a turquoise or teal double-breasted suit, and he's got Booker T and the MGs behind him. And it was one of the two, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, one of the two defining sets at Monterey. My cousin showed me. In my opinion, like, what's your third? Janis?
It's Janis, yeah.
Okay. Me, not so much, but my cousin showed me, my cousin Danny, who gave me my first guitar, showed me Hendrix and Monterey when I was 21. He's like, you ever seen this? And he busted into Like a Rolling Stone. That's Bob Dylan's grandmother over there. Yeah, I know, skip the verse, baby, don't worry about it. And then there was that, and the way it was shot, you could see that the night was cooling down, and you could see Otis's breath and the steam coming off of him, and the band is retardedly tight, and sort of brought his profile up to mainstream America. And it wasn't much longer after that I think they recorded Dock of the Bay, and then he got on the plane and then passed away at the age of 26.
Yeah, and the plane crashed into the lake in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
He was in his seat when they found them. When they found him in the lake, he was still in his seat.
26, when I saw Otis Redding, I always thought he was like 50.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't tell. He's like, oh, yeah, he's 26, but he could be 36. He could be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So here we go. You want to roll it?
Yep.
I've been loving you. Do you want to stop now?
We'd like to we'd like for you to kind of, we're going to slow it down this time and sing a soulful number. This song is a song that, you know, we all ought to sing sometime. You know? This is the love crowd, right? We all love each other, don't we? Am I right? Let me hear you say yeah now. All right. I've been loving you too long to stop now. You become a habit to me. I've been loving you, oh, too long, and I don't want to stop now. So wonderful, I can't stop now. As our fair grows old, ooh, I'm loving you, oh, too long, and I don't want to stop now, no, 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 I've been loving you just a little bit too long, and I don't want to stop now, no, 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 and don't make me stop now, oh, have mercy, no, baby, I'm down on my knees, please don't make me stop now, yeah, I love you.
Otis Redding at Monterey, June 1967. It's certainly worth, actually, his whole set was released on an album and also, I'm pretty sure, DVD, like Jimmy's set, complete set, Otis's complete set, are available. You can see all of them.
Is Janice's? No.
Well, I don't think she sang as many songs.
Oh, okay.
And again, the story behind Janice is it was just it wowed so many people, but it for whatever reason, if they were changing film, they didn't catch it, so that she went back the next day to do it. So the performance that you see of Ball and Chain was actually the second time she had sung that. But Otis Redding, man, it was we've talked about him before. There's Otis Redding and there's Sam Cooke. There's the Holy Trinity, right, in terms of soul singers.
Otis, Sam, and?
Well, there's, you could, James Brown, but James took it to a whole other, like, he veered off to funk, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the Godfather,
Wilson Pickett,
the godfather of funk.
But for me, when you know, if I'm going to listen to classic
pure soul, yeah,
it's Wilson Pickett, Otis Redding, and
so if you have to pick two out of three, which two do you pick?
There's a sweetness about Sam Cooke, and the older I get, the less sweet I am.
Does that
make
sense?
So
it's too sugary for you?
Yeah. Really? I mean, I'm not now it sounds like I'm putting Sam Cooke down, and I'm not. But you're asking me to pick two of the three.
So
it would be Wilson Pickett and Otis Redding. Okay. Yeah. If you said you could see
Otis,
you could see three of them. You could see three of them live at the peak right now around the corner.
Yeah.
At Honey's, I'd say I got to go with Wilson Pickett and Otis Redding. Sorry,
really?
Sam.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
I don't know.
It's a tough
I was born by the river in a little tent, and just like the river, I've been running ever since.
Oh, that's an amazing song. But Otis also...
I don't think Wilson ever wrote anything like that.
No, I'm not talking about writing.
You know, I'll always be your slave, even when I'm dead and buried in my
grave. I'm talking
about
performance live.
Or while I'm living.
Now, if you're talking about songwriting, that's a whole other issue.
Okay. Sam Cooke, Live in Harlem. You ever listen to that record?
At the Harlem Square Club? Yeah,
yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
No. Hey.
No, not. I'm just saying.
There's a reason why.
He wasn't too shabby.
There's a reason why there was only one Sam Cooke song, because Sam Cooke deserves a night on his own, which Howard Bilerman, that's how this kind of came about. Howard and his group, Howard wanted to do a tribute to Sam Cooke on Valentine's Day, which we're going to do in a smaller club. But Sam is not Southern soul.
I didn't say he was. We're just spitballing you and me.
Yeah.
That's all.
So I would see Wilson Pickett and Otis Redding double bill, and then I'd see Sam Cooke on his own. How about that?
You're dodging. Otis and Sam.
No, I answered. I didn't
He's
dodge
dodging.
At all. You're
He's
the
dodging.
One dodging.
He's dodging, ladies and gentlemen.
You're dodging.
Sam Cooke and Otis, and I wouldn't take Wilson.
No Wilson Pickett?
If I had to choose, no.
Okay. There's something about Wilson Pickett that has always
and
he's
Wilson
like
Pickett
the vocal
has cursed
equivalent
all of us.
To me. He's the vocal equivalent to me of Stevie Ray Vaughan on guitar.
Okay.
I have the same reaction hearing him
Wilson
sing. Wilson Pickett, yes.
Not Otis Redding.
I can't explain it. No, it's a different vibe. It's just a different
vibe. Also,
it's
Wilson
more...
Pickett cursed everybody with Mustang Sally, or cursed every bar band ever.
Mustang Sally! Do you know Mustang Sally?
So it's funny you mentioned a change is going to come. That's how the whole night started. I want to quickly, because I want to touch on... before we're done here, a little bit of everybody.
I have to fly to Toronto tonight anyway at midnight, so if we get it.
I don't know if you saw Derek Falls. You and Derek go back a ways, but to see Derek Falls and his daughter Angelica, who opened the show a cappella doing A Change Is Gonna Come, she's 18 in front of that kind of crowd, and then the way that the whole band kicked into Shotgun and a little bit of 25 Miles by Edwin Starr, that was a great start to the night.
Mr. Tommy Falls, his father on guitar.
Right. Three generations of
Gary McKenzie, the original bass player of Brand Van 3000, and a monster in his own right. Ben Vesna on drums, the blonde bomber, killing it. He was hitting, I didn't know that Ben hit that hard. He was hitting that hard. We had two amps on the riser, and I was saying to my guitar tech for the night, a good friend of mine, Andrew Sudlow, I was like, Sudsy, watch the amps. And he was beating the shit out of the drums. And he sat in with Jesse Stone after.
Right.
And the amps were like shaking back and forth. And
yeah, I was
it
thinking
was fun
of,
to watch that type of intensity.
I was thinking of the bald dude, Kenny Aronoff.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
That's watching him from the side stage. And then James Correa, who apparently has some film of what went down backstage, which I can't wait to see. James was videotaping quite a bit of the action.
Oh, no.
And he's got that sly grin about him. James did a Notice song, Hard to Handle.
Yeah.
And, again, he's been around town for a long, long time.
Yep.
And then Anakin Slade, I think a lot of people were surprised to see. That was one of our first surprises. Anakin Slade and his group covering Al Green.
And our very own CNS Studios
impresario. With the lead guitarist who looked like Rick Rubin out there.
He showed up. I said, Alan, and I know that Alan's a musician, but I didn't know that because... Alan, what's Anakin's guitar player's name?
John Rossner.
John Rossner couldn't make it. And so I see Alan downstairs, and he's like walking around the guitar case, and I was like, okay, what's going on? He's like, oh, I'm just sitting with Anakin. And I saw the Facebook Live video. So our very own Alan Hodgson, fucking killing it on guitar.
That was pretty cool.
Killing it.
Take me to the river and
let's
stay together.
Somebody call the morgue because Alan's killing it.
And then a good friend of yours, Graham Playford, who's been in Tommy Youngstein and
Old Blue Eyes. We call him annoyingly handsome.
He did. I'm so glad that we got a JJ Cale song in there.
Yeah.
Call Me the Breeze.
Yeah, man. That was great. I never played that song before. Myself.
Couldn't tell.
Well, I did a lot of faking. I turned the volume down on my guitar. I let Rob do the old Johnny Cash shot. I just strummed, did the old fakeroo, the old Ashley Simpson.
And then we mentioned Bilal and Simple Man. And then came your Sun Records tribute. Have you ever done an Elvis song before?
Yes.
In public?
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I just don't recall.
I mean, I don't do them. I don't do it all the time. At a young age, my parents had the, remember those big stereos that were made of all wood, maybe 900 pounds, and you lift them up and you had a spot for you had the radio, the receiver, then you had the turntable. It was all like built in what, like you'd have to get two friends to help move it.
Right.
And my parents had.
It's like a credenza.
A credenza, ladies and gentlemen. I guess what I'm Googling after the podcast. Sorry, very good. The credenza. My parents had a couple of records that were, they had sticky fingers. I think my cousin Emmett gave my dad this, and he's like, what's this bullshit? It's not Johnny Cash. So my dad stopped listening to music after 1958. But Sticky Fingers was on vinyl, and which is the Stones
recorded
album?
Muscle Shoals.
Yeah, but what's the Rolling Stones album with Bitch on it? It's Sticky Fingers,
Sticky
right?
Fingers.
Yeah, so Sticky Fingers on vinyl, and they had the double vinyl of the 68 Comeback Special. And everybody says that Elvis is a shit guitar player, but there's a point in the recording of the 68 Comeback Special where he takes the electric guitar off of Scotty Moore. So, you bet. Alan, can you pass me acoustic guitar? So, there's a point where Elvis starts to play. Here we go. Little box. Is it in tune? Yep. Here we go. So there's a part where it's like, you hear all this stuff. Sorry. And all this stuff. Now people are like, Elvis can't play guitar. That was Elvis playing guitar while singing. So I know this is a long-winded answer, but that's what I'm good at. But if you all those songs, it was DJ Fontana playing a suitcase and a tambourine. Scotty Moore was playing acoustic guitar. They had members of the Jordanaires, I think. So Trying to Get to You, When My Blue Moon Turns to Gold, One Night with You, Lottie Miss Claudie, which is an old Lloyd Price song, who was the one of the promoters at the Rumble in the Jungle with Muhammad Ali and George Foreman in Zaire, 1974, who also recorded Staggered Lee, which is an old sort of folk blues.
I might get him on my show, actually.
Who?
He's 85 years old.
Lloyd Price?
Yeah.
Oh, you got to. You got
He's
to.
Got a Staggered Lee. I'm related to somebody who knows him well, and he asked me if I wanted to get him on the air.
So for the Sun thing, I knew that I wanted to do, you could see the natural charisma of Elvis with no, like, you know, he wasn't in the, you know, he'd done a bunch of crap movies and all that stuff, but that, like, you know, any way you want me, the old Jimmy Reed stuff. Mm-hmm. We're going up, we're going down, we're going uptown, out, anywhere you want. That's Elvis Presley playing that guitar, and it's awesome. So when you said the Sun Records thing, and I did Trying to Get to You, I'd never played that song live. And of course, like an asshole, I go, yeah, yeah, I'll do Trying to Get to You. And then I was like shitting my pants for like the week going,
well, it was either Trying to Get to You or One Night. And then I went back because I was pretty sure One Night was not a Sun Records tribute because I'm a nerd with that stuff. And I double checked and so about a week ahead of the schedule, I don't know if you're still juggling with the two of them trying to decide, but I said to Shane, Trying to Get to You is a Sun Records song.
And I was
One Night is not.
Right. I was hoping that you were going to pick Trying to Get to You because in One Night with You, there's like, One Night with You.
I love that. That might be my favorite Elvis song.
These things that we like, then it goes, see, I can't sing that high. Very quiet light, you know I never did no wrong. But now I know my very quiet light. And then he goes way up, he goes, it's been too lonely, too long. Anyways, I can't sing that high.
No, so but in the 68 comeback special is an amazing version.
Yeah. So then you send me the text, and I'm like, oh, my, thank God. Thank the Lord.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was, and who did you play with, in addition to some members of the house band?
So, like 6 weeks prior, I had sent a message because I play in this band that performs maybe three times a year called the Bad Starters, and it's the old rhythm section from the Hellbound Hepcats. So Sandro Sanchioni, who's touring, he just got back from tour like 3 days before. He was in Hawaii or something. And a great upright bass player, fantastic upright bass player by the name of Jordan James Petty. And I had had the longest residency at Honey Martin's at that time. It was like 5 years. And I said, no, there's no one's going to go longer. I did 5 years on Wednesdays, missed two Wednesdays. I said, there's no one going to beat 5 years, you know. And they did with the Hepcats, they did 8 years of Mondays.
Really?
Yeah. But they were kids when they started.
Rob Lutz and like, Rob McDonald used to do Mondays for a long time, right?
Yeah. So 6 weeks prior, I send them a text. Everything's happening. It's like, now the house band is like eight guys. You've put on, and I say this with love, there's like 59 bands. I'm looking at the lineup. I'm going, you know, I hope I don't crack under the pressure. And then I said to myself, man, it would be great if for the Sun stuff if we got Sandro and Jordan. So 2 days before, because I was going to do, and I remember you promoting it going, Shane Murphy fronting two bands. And I was like, truth in advertising, if I show up and I just do it with the house band twice, it's going to look like, you know,
I was lying.
You were lying, and I didn't want to do that to you. So I texted them, and we ran it in the dressing room, in our dressing room. That was that had been ambushed and taken over by Andrea Romolo.
And her friend.
And her friend. What was her friend's name? Maxine? Esmeralda. Regina. This rye is getting to me. Canadian Club 12. Oak Cask. Hello.
No, but they're I'm sure they're up to no good for the weekend. They stayed the whole weekend.
And so I texted them two days before, and I said, I know I hadn't talked to you guys in 6 weeks because I had other fish to fry, and I said, would you do it? And they were both free. And I thought it was playing with those two guys was awesome.
Great. Yeah. And then that was the perfect setup. Everything that had happened, finishing with Shane's Sun Records tribute into the Ghost Town Blues Band for the first time at Club Soda. Now, again, I've told a story about how I saw them, how I inadvertently, with tickets in my back pocket to a Feist indoor show at Jazz Fest, these guys stopped me in my tracks. And I hope I was able to explain. I hope you guys saw what happened to me that night, why it happened to me. Their performance for 45
sure.
minutes.
Sure. Just bring in the heat, baby. On fire.
And
it's different listening to... it's different... some people might take exception to what I'm about to say, but it's different listening to people who... Americans playing American music. I've had the opportunity to play with a bunch of Americans who are expats who are living in Montreal, and it's... It's American music. It's their music. So, you know, you drink it up, the cultural references, the radio is different down there, and there's just this little something. But we have our own flavor. We have a bunch of talented musicians, obviously, in Montreal. But to see them do their thing, it's just a different... There's a different flavor to it, for lack of a better term. For me, anyway. All in my head, but...
Yeah, but they had never been part of anything like this, and I think...
They had not.
No. They're on the festival circuit, and they're on the jam band circuit, but this is a one-night thing with all these bands backstage.
It must have been pretty odd for them.
It was, but eventually they got into it, into the spirit of it, and they really enjoyed it.
Thanks to Leonard Yell.
Mojo Len.
Got everybody into the spirit.
And that ended act one.
Yeah.
After their 40-minute set. And then, thankfully, because I kind of lost track of you, and we were starting to fall a little behind, at some point the lights went
out. Which was rare.
The lights went out, and Jesse Stone and his band paid tribute. That was the other surprise of the night, since we had just done a Tommy Youngstein, Tom Petty tribute. I don't think anybody expected it. Tom Petty from Gainesville, Florida, and Jesse and his band just killed it. They had people singing along to American Girl. It was a great, great three-song tribute to Tom Petty.
Yeah,
they really did a great job. And then Andre came out, performed Son of a Preacher Man that we talked about, Dusty Springfield. Dusty in Memphis, one of the great soul records of all time. For those who aren't aware of Dusty Springfield, she was actually English from London.
Most people don't know that.
Yeah. Because she sounds
Reggie
so
young in the boys.
Yeah, she sounded so perfectly Southern at 60s South. But that's an all-time classic album. I think it's Elvis Costello's. I think it's on his list of top 10 albums of all time, Dusty in Memphis. And the first song she ever learned on guitar was Me and Bobby McGee, and you guys got a chance to play behind her on that. And then came Selena Wolfe, right?
Yeah.
What are you playing here?
You know exactly what song that is.
And then Johnny Griffin came out and did another Otis Redding song, That's How Strong My Love, which he's done before. And then the song, there's some people who might not be familiar with the second song that he played, which is None of Us Are Free, which was originally recorded by Ray Charles, but a lot of people don't know that version.
Really?
Ray Charles later in his career, it didn't really go anywhere. But then Solomon Burke recorded it with the Blind Boys, and I think that's the version that you guys did.
Ray had 17 kids, so there was a lot of albums he had to put out. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of children.
Yeah.
Him and BB just spreading the love.
But
what was that scene in the movie? You could tell by her wrists whether she's beautiful or not. Jamie Foxx. Come on, just let me hold your hand for a second.
And where did we? Oh, by the way, Mike Griffin was out there from Honey Martins, and it was pretty cool again to see all of the NDG represented on stage. And there was a purpose to having you guys, Selena and Johnny, and back to back kind of thing. He was almost like a proud uncle, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, Honey's has become I played there when it was Irish Coffee. When it was his brother Ricky's place, mm-hmm. and then Mike took it over and it became Honey Martins, and a lot of people have played there, you know, just this quaint, cozy pub in NDG, and it's been a spot for a lot of musicians to be able to develop and work on their craft. So, yeah, I'm sure he was proud.
And then we got Howard Billerman and his Hotel 2 Tango recording studio, All-Stars tribute to the Muscle Shoals studio in Alabama. Howard,
that's a mouthful, eh?
Howard was, we're going to get Howard, it was supposed to be today, but he's busy, but we're going to get Howard to sit down. We'll talk more about what he does and how he does it, but these shows do not take place without Howard's contribution.
For sure.
He's always finding musicians. He's always so gung-ho on doing his own thing. And and the horn set, we haven't touched on the horn section yet. You mentioned the saxophone player that you knew from Toronto.
Andrew Moljian.
Right. And
it's either Hungarian or Finnish or Turkish, and I always fuck it up. I end up calling him Mogan.
And Howard,
Moljian.
And Howard had a trumpet player, Elwood Epps, who's pretty well known up around Mile End.
Yeah.
And
that's
and
a great name, by the way.
Yeah.
What's your name? Elwood Epps.
Yeah. I think he may have another name.
Oh, really?
And Simon Nechny. Who also helped out on horns? It was
three times fast.
That's the only thing I was concerned about is how, and I think I asked you at one point, well, if we don't have horns, how do you cover the horn parts of some of these classic songs without horns? And you mentioned the Hammond B3, but this would not have been the same.
No
night
and
without
then
the horns.
We had
section.
That conversation, and I went home and I was like, shit. And then that's when I called Mogan.
Yeah,
and then you said that Howard and his Hotel to Tango recording studio All Stars were bringing those guys. So, but they were super tight for the show. Every time I tried to contact Howard about soundcheck, he's like, "I'm in rehearsal. I can't talk right now. I'll call you." We ended up finally touching base, but it was he's the type of guy that does everything right the first time. So you can see the attention to detail.
And then Randy Renaud introduced you with the greatest introduction I think I've ever heard at a Montreal show.
It was amazing. It was better than the performance. I watched this like, shit. That was good. No, Randy's been very cool since I got banned from Shom. He's been in my corner the whole time. And I'm just kidding. But no, we spoke briefly. I had no idea he was going to do that. And he was like pumping me up because I was like, this is like deep into the evening. It's like halfway through act two and I'm tired. I'm on autopilot. I'm not on autopilot, but I'm not, you can only get so excited before the adrenaline wears off. And now I'm looking at the pacing of the show and I'm downstairs. I'm like, who's up next? I'm talking to the stage crew. I'm talking to Guy, the monitor guy. He's talking to Eve in front of house, and I've got a million things going on, and really playing becomes becomes secondary, and then I'm there to do a job, and I play a lot, and I'm used to it. So listening to that intro, I'm getting hyped up here. You know what I mean? He's like, at the crossroads and the deal with the devil. And I'm like, yeah, preach, Randy, preach. Amen.
Yeah, it was great. He really got into the whole spirit of the night. He was standing 10 feet from me, grooving to the music on the floor in front of the stage. It was cool to see. Yeah, thank you, Randy. Fun. And
thank you, Randy.
And all the boys and ladies. Sharon Hyland was there from Shom. I love Sharon. Natasha Hall from CJD. And Bilal, of course. And I know I'm going to leave. Jason Rockman was a big help. Terry DeMonte and Esteban in the morning.
Yep.
Pumping it out. We really appreciate that. And the guys from K103.
Jake Lawrence.
Jake Lawrence and Lori Deer and Susie DeLaron. I mean, you and Corey and went out there a couple of times, right?
Yeah.
That was cool. And so thank
Breakfast
you.
Breakfast Television?
Breakfast Television. Well, save that one.
You don't want to talk about BTV?
No, I want to save that one. I want to thank Elias Makos and the gang there. But there's a bit of a backstory there. So then after you did your thing, including Give It Up or Turn It Loose, James Brown, Paul DeLaurier came out, and I had seen Paul, of course, at the Jazz Fest play at Club Soda. I had never seen him do Not Fade Away. And part of the night was going to be Texas Outlaws. And I realized...
Buddy Holly's from?
Lubbock, Texas.
No, you're good.
But I wanted to do a whole... set on Townes Van Zandt, Guy Clark, the singer-songwriters.
Really
Steve
pump
Earle,
up the party.
Billy Joe Shaver.
Sitting around realized, waiting to die.
But you didn't, yeah, but that wasn't,
Poncho
it was
going to
be Poncho and Lefty, yeah. But the more I looked.
Have you ever heard Kathleen?
Of course.
Rolled over and died with the baby boy safe inside? Come on.
Well, Townes was troubled, man.
I would say.
It just didn't fit the night, and but I still wanted to have obviously like Stevie Ray Vaughan and Texas presence, and I knew Paul did this amazing version. It's almost psychedelic version of Not Fade Away, and
he had the theremin going.
Why don't you explain what that is?
The theremin. I'm not an expert. My limited knowledge of a theremin is that it is a metal rod, much like a lightning rod, that has a pickup attached to it. And however they configure it is, it's one hand adjusts the volume. So it emits a, for lack of a better term, a sine wave. So a sine wave is just a regular tone. Like this is the emergency broadcast system. When it goes, ooh, that's a sine wave. That's just a synthetically generated note with no real character. Like when I play a guitar, you know it's a guitar. If you play a saxophone, each instrument has its own character and sound. So a theremin has this very sort of spooky quality to it, and if you put it through a loud guitar amp with echo, as Jimmy Page did, and a lot of people poured his head in bands like this, so it's also very tricky to play. So one hand controls the volume, so how loud you're going to be, and the other hand controls the pitch. So you can go, ooh, 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 but you're playing with the air. Mm-hmm. So when I play if I play a guitar, I've got frets, right? So I've got little wires that, help me. There's only, With the theremin, that doesn't exist. So it's very, you're just, it's if you move your hand a 16th of an inch, it'll change the pitch and you'll be out of tune. And that's not what you want to be when you're playing it and playing with other musicians. And so he had that, and he's a lights out wicked guitar player, and you know, Greg and Sam.
Greg Morosi, yeah. Sam Harrison, and yeah.
So just, it was just, yeah.
That was an incredible 12-minute version of Not Fade Away that I'm sure most people had never seen or heard before.
And thank you for skipping soundcheck. Oh, no, they did soundcheck, but I would like to say thank you to all the artists that did skip soundcheck, because that was, that's
smooth. Yeah, otherwise that we might still be there, huh? Yeah. Angel Forrest had been in England, touring England and Scotland. She didn't arrive back until just a couple of days. And again, another instance where an artist, a well-established blues singer, in front of a band that she knows all you guys, and you've all played with her at various times, but you had never together these particular tunes that she was going to sing. And
right.
She sang Try Just a Little Bit Harder, Janis, and To Love Somebody, Janis's version of the Bee Gees hit.
Yeah. Alec and Rob have played with her in multiple incarnations of various bands. So they were locked into what she's doing. It was more for Tony, for TLB, Tony Lombardi and Marky Beats to sort of rise to that occasion, because it's they were already tight. They know each other very, very well, and many hours spent on stage together. So I think for that, I mean, she's a fantastic performer. Nothing to be said.
And Ricky Paquette on guitar. Ricky Paquette, I remember Ricky
guitar,
as a kid.
Yeah,
he was like
virtuoso.
A phenom.
Yeah, virtuoso, and her partner, husband, and musical confidant, Denis Coulombe, who I toured with. Angel, I toured all over Quebec with Angel and did my first sort of big stage shows with Angel.
And they had their kids backstage and their dog backstage.
And their dog, yeah.
It was beautiful.
The Angel Forest family band, yeah.
And then Don Tyler Watson with...
That was my... When I got the charts for Dr. Feelgood, then I was shitting my pants a little bit, because that was, you know, a lot of the songs are sort of very,
they've been covered a lot.
But they're not. It's not. They're not songs with a lot of chords. They're not that harmonically complex. They're sort of woven into your subconscious. So I didn't know how to play Midnight Hour, but I tried it twice, I knew the song, because I knew the song already. Son of a Preacher Man, stuff like that. But Dr. Feelgood is like a proper gospel song that was adapted. They changed the lyrics, but that's a gospel progression with a lot of chords in it. And I was like, oh, man. But the band, Alec knew the song, and Rob had played the song a million times. So that was like, once I knew that we were free and clear once that song was done, I was happy.
And that led into the peak of the night with Jonas and Corey doing the Allman Brothers classic South Pound with a killer guitar solo in there. And into I'm Going Down. And at the last waltz we did further on up the road with a four guitar attack.
Yes.
Which included Rob and yourself. And
was Rob at
Sure he was. The yeah, they backed one? Tom Wilson, Rob,
oh,
and Rob
right.
Lutz.
That's right. Yeah.
And it was. So it was you and Rob.
And you said, "Why don't you get up for I'm Going Down?"
Well, hold on. But from the last waltz,
right.
Further on up the road, who were
Mike
the four
O'Brien?
Guitars? Mike O'Brien,
Rob McDonald,
who was also out
me.
There at the end, and Patrick Creef, actually, who
yeah.
almost showed up for this one as well. So it was Corey Diabo and Angel on vocals with Jonas and. Paul DeLaurier, as
yeah.
you mentioned earlier, and yeah. that was amazing, and that was basically that was it.
That was a full boat.
Yeah,
and you're like, and I was like sitting there, and I was like, it's almost over.
I'm going, where are you? Shouldn't you
and
be soloing up here?
Yeah, I'm like, why don't you go solo up there? And I remember my hands were, at that point, my hands were. I play a lot of guitar, and my hands were sore just from like touching the fretboard. Like my hands were aching, like I was starting to get towards muscular failure in my hands. I could feel it, you know, and I was just like, no, I'm like, there's like five lights out guitar players, I don't need to be there. And you're like, no, go up. And I remember going, no, I'm not gonna do that. And then Midnight Hour was the, I know we're jumping, Midnight Hour was the next thing for me, because with the horns and stuff, when we had changed keys, like because Wilson Pickett can really sing very high. So we changed the keys a couple of times. And then it was, we only ran it, I think, half of the song at soundcheck with Elwood and Simon.
Simon, yeah. Neck and neck.
Neck and necky. Neck and necky.
Yeah.
And those guys are pro, and, you know, we changed keys, and no big deal, and everybody knew their parts. Everybody had done their homework. And
Midnight Special was beautiful. You sang that beautifully.
Yeah. I'd never sang that live before, but I was always a big Lead Belly fan, and his version's a bit... speeds up, it slows down, it's been unorthodox, and there's a lot of verses, and I liked what CCR had done with it, so we did sort of a mishmash of both, and the lines ain't marching to the table, ain't no food upon the table, ain't no pork up in the pan, but you better not complain, boy, you get in trouble with the man. And Lead Belly had been incarcerated twice for murder, had gotten off twice. And I find those lyrics very, very spooky. So it was a pleasure to do that song. And then we did
In the Midnight Hour. The encore started with Statesboro.
Statesboro
Blues with Matt Isbell and the half the band from Ghost Town coming back. Yeah. It was just
the Mitch Melnick encore special. Well, if there are encores, guys, just figure it out. I was like, yeah, sure, we'll just figure it out.
Okay, now the truth can be told. That now we figured. You know, between 12 and 12:30 would end, so obviously there'd be a midnight theme, and In the Midnight Hour is one of my all-time favorite songs. I wish there was an actual five-minute version of it, so you guys did it for me. But I was thinking about songs with midnight, with a midnight theme, and Brown Sugar had been recorded at Muscle Shoals, and there was no Rolling Stones song in there. And I was thinking maybe Brown Sugar, it was maybe a little too obvious, but it would also be at the end, it would be a party kind of feel. Everybody can sing along to that. And
tricky song.
It is a very briefly, why don't you explain why it's so tricky? A lot of words.
It's a particular arrangement. It's ingrained into everybody. So if you screw that song up, people will know intuitively, very quickly, that something is wrong. And it makes people feel bad.
It's the end of the night after 5.5 hours. And
yeah, so I don't know when it had gotten bumped, but again, I was just like, oh, my God. Thank God. And Keith Richards is an unorthodox guitar player and plays in a special tuning. And if you don't, you have to have a guitar with 5 strings on it instead of 6. And it's called the Keith tuning. It's just an open G chord missing a 6th string. And it's a tricky song to play. It's a tricky arrangement. You have to be able to pull it off, and not that we couldn't have pulled it off. It would have been
an adventure.
It could have been a mess.
And the major surprise of the night, and I can tell it now, is that we were both talking to Frank Marino quite a bit. Frank Marino's all time favorite guitarist was Johnny Winter, and Johnny Winter's from Texas. And with Chuck Berry passing away, we thought it would have been perfect way to end would be Go Johnny Go. Yeah, Go Johnny Go.
Well, you're tired. It's okay. We just did.
Yeah. We're all, this is the longest podcast I think we've ever done.
Is
I apologize.
It?
I think so. I don't know, but we're almost done here. And I was talking to Frank quite a bit, and we're getting close. Frank hasn't performed in public in 7 years. He's been working on this amazing DVD that was shot in Cleveland that he's had to slave over to get it in sync, and. We're almost there, and then Frank is very religious, and it was Orthodox Good Friday, as it turned out, so he couldn't make it. But that would have been pretty cool. It was going to be Johnny B. Good, and then once he played a 4-minute song, I said, Frank, if you want to keep going, and there's still people there, just keep playing for. So that didn't happen. And there's one other song that I thought initially would be part of the encores, and that would be, again, going back to Wilson Pickett, the Wilson Pickett cover of Hey Jude, which features Dwayne Allman on lead guitar. And again, it was a moment when I think you were relieved when
oh
I said,
God.
Let's just forget about
oh
it.
Oh, my
there's,
God.
There's no midnight in it. I think we have enough.
Well, you're like, yeah, we'll just get someone to sing the first verse, and then someone else come in and sing the second verse, and you guys just figure it out. Yeah, we'll just figure it out. No problem. yeah.
Anyway, it was an amazing night. I hope you're justifiably proud.
So I'm proud of I'm very proud of Selena. I'm proud of the way the night came off. I remember a friend of mine, she said to me, she goes, you know, you might crack under the pressure. Do you think you can handle it? And I was like, well, you never know. And with that many bands and that many changeovers and that much on the line, people paying, you know, $60+ and whatever, that was my proudest moment, you know, that it came off and everybody was happy. And
it was a great crowd.
It was weird. I was super stressed the day before, and then I came into the sound check, and it was this sort of calm came over me. So the performances aside, for me, it was I'd chosen the band well, and my stage crew, Dave Surrett, Andrew Sudlow, and Joe the Rabbit, and he's wanted by the police, so I can't say his full name, but so everything was that I was most proud of, that it came off, and that you were happy. And
oh yeah, I wanted to make sure I caught as much of it as I could, and I did. And it was just thanks to the
crew.
How'd
you find the sound?
Well, where I was, it was.
I was at the YMCA, and somebody came up to me, and they're like, "My girlfriend was at the show, and she said it was like muddy, and she found it muddy." I was like, "Oh, it's the first person I heard, the first thing I heard about that." So I wanted to talk to you and see how this, you know.
Well, where I was, I mean, I went to Yves Moquin. You know, it's a challenge with that many people. And
sure.
I asked
no
them
fun.
Because a couple of people had mentioned to me they were having an issue with hearing the lead vocals. And yeah. Once I went to him, it was fine.
Yeah.
But
a lot of stuff going on for Yves and Guy, so.
We're thinking of taking this on the road because we've had requests from Toronto and Ottawa, so stay tuned on that front, as if there's not enough work to do, but something to think about. But again,
Under the pressure.
Thank you to everybody who came out. It was spectacular. It was a great, great night. And for those of you who experienced Billy Bob Productions night for the first time, when we do our next show, which will be smaller, I hope you'll come out and support some of the smaller shows that we do, because it's really all about the music and exposing mostly local musicians to an audience that they deserve. How did you guys get fed the whole night?
It was a buddy of mine, Stuart LeBaron, who has LeBaron Bites operating out of Hudson, the beautiful town of Hudson, Quebec. And we were shooting the breeze. I played Hudson St. Paddy's Day. Nearly lost part of my liver. And he's an amazing caterer, amazing, amazing chef. And we were together back in the Claremont days. He actually got me into the Claremont. And he said, yo, I'd love to provide you guys with some food and stuff. And so we spoke to you, worked it out. And
thank you, Stuart, so much. I sampled the early sound check portion of the catering.
The sandwiches event. And the crab cakes and the chicken parmesan.
I didn't get that
wraps,
stuff.
And then they had the caviar. And
it was
amazing.
No, they did not.
No, there's no caviar.
And thank you. Special thanks again to Lorne Rubin, sponsor of this podcast, and Mitch Garber, who went the extra yard and actually bought those two main tables behind the soundboard.
Thanks, Lorne.
And what's next for you?
For me, I'm going to finish mixing the EP. I just shot a little mini promo video, a little commercial with James Correa, actually, probably like 3 days before a week before the soda show. And I'm doing some pre-prod, and I'm looking at recording a full length this summer. And see what you and I are going to do in terms of the next the next event, whether that's this show on the road or something at a different venue in Montreal, and what the concept is. And I'm just going to hit as many festivals as I can. I got Newfoundland again this year. I got Rimouski Jazz Festival. I got some dates coming up in Trombola, I think, and waiting for the festival stuff to come in, and just on the grind. You know, the grind doesn't stop. So whether it's Hurley's or Brutopia or Honey's on Wednesdays, or just nose to the grindstone and keep playing guitar and keep trying to get away with it and not crack under the pressure.
There are going to be, again, there are postings all over social media. There's going to be an incredible...
And a special shout-out to Wade Deer, who I met. Do you know
yes.
Wade?
Yes.
He posted a bunch of stuff.
Yes,
on his
Facebook.
Ganawage.
Well, I've seen him in Shattagy at the Old Orchard. That's
he
how I know him.
A bunch of stuff.
There's some great shots on his Facebook page.
Shout-out to Wade Deer. You find him, D-E-R, and posted like Celine, posted a bunch of
stuff.
Yeah.
From
like
the balcony,
multiple,
right?
Yeah, multiple videos. So we'd like to thank him. I met him briefly after the show. So
there's going to be
Wade, if you're listening, thank you very much.
Thank you, Wade. There's going to be a photo album by Tim Snow at MitchMalnick.com. There'll be a complete set list with all the musicians in the complete running order.
Is it going to be the backstage shenanigans?
Well, that's
with James
it.
Correa?
I'm waiting for the James Correa film. The
oh my god,
it'll be like the and bootleg series without anything else. It's just like
without the drugs,
without the studio stuff. It's the bootleg stuff,
The
original bootleg stuff from backstage. I don't know how or in what form he's going to release it.
I remember my parish priest came. You didn't see him. Father Flanagan was there.
Oh, really?
And he was about to light up a huge joint, and James was filming. I said, James, come on. This guy is parishioners. Thing. I'm just kidding.
Thanks as well.
There's
to
no
Kesh
father.
Kesh Deer, who manned the laptop, all of the images you saw on the screen back of the musicians. That was all Kesh. And thanks a whole lot to everybody for coming out. It really...
Joe the Rabbit, Dave Surrett, Andrew Sudlow, the stage crew, the Wrecking crew.
Early on, there were some people who doubted that we could fill Club Soda. And so it's very satisfying that we were able to, and we wouldn't have done it without you. Thanks. And again, to all the musicians, stay tuned to MitchMelnick.com. And we'll be back here in a couple of weeks at CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side. What's your Instagram handle?
My Instagram handle is at Hunter Z Thompson, same as my Twitter handle.
And mine is at Shane Murphy MTL, same as my very active Twitter account. So
and Facebook.
And Facebook.
CNS Studios.
Is that the handle, Alan? Yes.
All right.
You can find him.
We're going out with a song that I didn't get to hear. I was hoping originally to hear it on stage live, but it was too complicated.
Hey, a little shot, so, little shot to the kitty there before we part.
Here's my favorite version of this classic.
You
we'll
guys just
talk to you in a
verse,
couple of weeks.
And I'll sing the other verse. It'll just be fine. And the horns will just come in when they want.
Dwayne Allman on lead guitar.
Hey, Jew, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her in your heart, then you can start to make it better. Hey, Jew, don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you'll begin to make it better. Anytime you feel the pain, hey Jude, refrain. Don't carry the world upon your shoulder. For you know that it's a fool. Down. You found her, now go on.